This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Well, good afternoon and welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on ESPN 1000. I am Connor McKnight, big guy, big voice guy, said it, so it's got to be true. Lots to talk about on this afternoon's episode of White Sox Weekly. Jack McGrath, our producer, on the other side of the glass, making a phone call right now to bring our first guest of the afternoon onto the show. You know him, you love him. Len Casper is going to hang out with us in just a little bit. But you could celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan today. Be here for the biggest matchups, exciting new promotions, and opening day on Thursday, March 27th. Plus, get access to the best seats at the best value, flexible payment plans, savings on single games, and more. To secure your ticket plan, visit whitesox.com/2025. Sox Fest Live is underway. Day one is in the books. It was a fun one at the Romova Theater in Bridgeport. Day two starts later this afternoon. After we pack up the show here at ESPN 1000, I'm heading over to Sox Fest Live day two for more of the programming and seeing the guys, seeing coaches, seeing front office members, all that kind of stuff. And most importantly, seeing fans. Looking forward to the after party at Sox Fest Live tonight as well. I'm looking forward to the final portion of the programming tonight. I get a chance to talk with the panel, which is the Sox on Deck panel. It's going to be myself kind of leading things, leading the discussion, I suppose. Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery, Noah Schultz, and Hagen Smith, along with farm director Paul Janisch, all there on stage. Looking forward to that. We'll talk today about those guys and those prospects because MLB Pipeline has a brand new top 100 prospects out. The White Sox did very well, six of them in the top 100. We'll talk about who they are, where that ranks, and what happens next with each guy. We've also got a list of the non-roster invitees for White Sox spring training, and we'll go through that in a little bit too. But the man of the hour, Len Casper, was hitting the base with his band, The Diff, at Sox Fest Live last night, headlining in a way that not many Major League Baseball play-by-play men can do. Len, thanks so much for hopping on. I guess first and foremost, what's key in assessing the post-game performance of a band at a night like Sox Fest? Do you guys go through the individual sets, the guitar solos, the bass slides, and kind of decide what did and did not go right? How do you break it down afterward?
Oh, probably do a little post-game analysis or post-gig analysis, as you indicated. By the way, you're the man of the hour.
Oh, God.
You're getting well-deserved headlines this week. But, no, I really enjoy playing bass in that band, and I'm just kind of along for the ride. And I guess the main thing is don't make any mistakes. But, obviously we kicked off the festivities last night, and by the end of our set, the place was packed. So I take that as a good sign.
Yeah, you didn't. Nobody left during the set. That's a big one.
Right.
That is. I cannot say that for any of the bad ska bands I was in high school. I think we emptied out crowds. We were used as the limit's best friend. You also had an opportunity, Len, to kind of lead the State of the Sox discussion with White Sox general manager Chris Getz and first-year manager Will Venable last night. That's kind of the headlining event of Sox Fests in the past, and you had a chance to kind of emcee that. I guess more than anything, instead of going beat by beat through the whole thing, what's your biggest takeaway about the White Sox from a front office and managerial leadership standpoint now that so much has changed and so much new is in place, and you had a chance to talk to two key guys last night?
Yeah, I think two big takeaways for me. Number one, I think there's just a real acknowledgement of kind of where they are in the cycle right now. And this roster is young and will continue to get maybe even younger. There will be some veteran guys, particularly Martin Perez, the lefty, who might end up kind of being your de facto number one.
Yeah.
You know, we don't know who will be the opening day starter, but it wouldn't shock me if he's definitely on their mind in that regard. But beyond that, I think the competition angle is really interesting. We tend to, in this game, in most places, and I think even here, and this will be my fifth season with the White Sox, but in previous years, there hasn't been a ton of actual spring training competition. You kind of knew at almost every position around the diamond, and for the most part, what the starting rotation and maybe six or seven guys in the bullpen, and the battles kind of became maybe one platoon position spot and, you know, two or three relievers and a fifth starter. I think that competition is going to be pretty vast all the way around this year. And as you know, who doesn't make that 26-man roster to open the season in late March doesn't mean that those guys won't get to the big leagues this year. I think a lot of them will. But it's a unique spring training in that regard, and that, you know, you're kind of penciling in guys you think might end up getting most of the reps at various positions. But if somebody has a really good spring, I think that'll matter a lot more than in most camps. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. Talking with Len Casper, voice of the White Sox here on ESPN 1000. I think you're right. And in talking with a couple of, you know, White Sox front office members and coaches here over the last few days, I'm kind of re-excited about spring training battles myself, though I see it written up in a lot of places where, you never know what spring training results are going to mean for someone. So winning a battle, what does that mean? What does it not mean? In my view, it's that they competed and that they had the opportunity to win something, not whether you hit 330 with 14 bombs in a Cactus League season. I don't know if that's how you feel about it as well, but for me, it's just the fact that these two, these three, these four guys got to compete for a spot and win something. That changes mindsets heading into April, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the other part is, when spring training can be a fooler, right?
Yeah.
There are a lot of examples of pitchers who were just awful in March and went on to have the best year of their career. A guy making a roster, hitting 480 in spring training, and then ends up back in the big leagues 2 weeks into the regular season. So you hate to overdo that to a degree, but I also think that you're right. The process of the competition in and of itself is valuable here, and just kind of the merit system that you're creating in this organization. And I think Will, as a first-year manager coming in here and getting to learn the players, is just setting that tone of, we're going to give at-bats and innings to the guys who compete and are good, as opposed to, well, yeah, you were good, but we kind of had this spot slotted for this guy, and that could be demoralizing for players a lot. You know, Colson Montgomery, a great example. Yeah. I have not talked to anybody about whether he can be the opening day shortstop if he has a good spring, or it's, you know, they want him to get a certain amount of at-bats back in the minor leagues, but they're probably open-minded to all of it. And I think that Montgomery probably comes into camp thinking, I'm going to win that job in March, not in April or May.
I wonder your overall impressions of Will Venable as both a first-year manager and just kind of a baseball guy. He was sought after by a lot of organizations. He comes with a terrific, you know, kind of schooling from three different winning organizations throughout his coaching career. What are your takeaways from your time with Will here over the last day or so?
Yeah, I've known Will for a while, and he's one of the smartest people I've met, not just in baseball, but obviously he's got a great background, comes from a big league family. His dad, Max, was an outfielder in the major leagues. Was a two sports star in high school and then in college as well. Wanted to be a basketball player, ended up choosing baseball. Had a nice major league career, got to play for a lot of interesting managers. And then as a major league coach, right? Joe Maddon, Alex Cora, Bruce Bochy. So he's learned from some really good ones. He's measured. I think he'll be patient, but I also think that don't let don't let the veneer, I guess, fool you. I think he's ultra competitive as well.
Yeah.
And I do think that he'll set that tone early on in spring training in terms of what he expects his guys to do and how this will look. So I'm excited to see how it'll go. And, you know, for a first-time manager, there's always going to be a learning curve. And I think that the other thing about Will that I really respect, he strikes me as the kind of person who knows what he doesn't know, right? And he'll rely on a lot of his coaches, particularly the guys who've been here before, early on to kind of get to know the team. And that's the one good thing about spring training. I think we all generally agree it's probably too long. But for this particular group in 2025, spring training probably could be 2 or 3 weeks longer, and that would be just fine, because by opening day, you'd like to think that Will has a pretty good idea of what he has on this roster.
Yeah, the only guys I can think of that would argue with a longer spring training is are the catchers. I think they're ready to cut that a little bit shorter one way or the other.
Yes.
But, you know, Len, you, speaking of catching, you and I and DJ for the last like 2 months of the season last year, we were talking about the pitching and the strength of the White Sox organization, but now catching seems to be as much a strength as anything else with Kyle Teal in the fold and Edgar Caro there as well. Both of them is a bit of a tease, top 100 prospects as ranked by MLB Pipeline. I had a chance to talk with Steve Stone a little bit yesterday as we were getting set on the TV network CHSN. And, you know, he pointed out catching is it's a strength of this system right now. And that has not been the case for the organization for some time. And we keep on hearing over this offseason from many different organizations that catching is gold. And I wonder if you're starting to change or have changed your perspective on just what catching depth through an org really means to a team.
Yeah, I think it's huge. And you know, Carroll comes with a great reputation in terms of his bat. And I think in terms of the catching part of it, right, that's catching up to the offense. And we're going to see him this year in the big leagues. There's no question. I also think we can't overlook Corey Lee. You know, that competition thing that we talked about off the top, he knows what the roster looks like, and Kyle Teal and Edgar Caro are kind of waiting in the wings. So, you know, this could be Corey Lee's breakout year. You never know. And he's obviously worked with the pitchers on this staff more than those guys have. I talked to Kyle Teal briefly yesterday, and he is super excited about joining the organization. Braden Montgomery is as well. And, you know, it's really neat to see just how excited, because I think they understand the opportunity here to maybe get to the big leagues a little sooner, faster than they would have in Boston. But beyond that, the idea of potentially being with a young group of players that you kind of grow with together. And I think that's the ultimate goal, right? That you have, you know, maybe 5 or 6 position players, maybe 5 or 6 or more pitchers who are all kind of roughly the same age at the same development stage, and they all kind of get there at the same time, and then away we go. I think that's kind of the ideal scenario for the White Sox moving forward here these next couple years.
We're going to hear from Kyle Teal on the show. He made an appearance on MLB Network just a couple of days ago, so stay tuned for that. Len, before I let you go, first, thanks for everything the last 4 years. You are the man. But I know you're a baseball historian as much as anything else, and the Hall of Fame results came out, at least for the active, or rather the first ballot players, the 5-year players. CC Sabathia, Ichiro Suzuki, and Billy Wagner all in. I loved watching all of them. I just wondered what you think about closers, kind of the line we draw on closers getting into the Hall of Fame these days, and how you sit on a guy like Billy Wagner getting in?
Well, it's a great question. I do think that if you're looking at each position separately, I don't know how many punters and kickers are in the NFL or in the Football Hall of Fame.
Not that many.
Not that many, but you know, you can't just say that if you have a guy who can win a game with his foot at the end of the game, or lose the game, that guy, whoever the best of all time is, you know, shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. Of course he should. So closers end up not being on the field as much as any other position on the field, but I feel like their impact is outsized because of the time when they're in the game. It's usually at the end and in the biggest moments. So I'm good with Billy Wagner getting in, and it might open the door down the road to a Craig Kimbrell, a more recent vintage, somebody like that, or a Kenley Jansen. But where I go, and you know, Ichiro should have gotten all the votes. I don't know who didn't vote for him, but it doesn't particularly matter. But what it illustrates, especially with the new numbers that we can look at, is Kenny Lofton.
Oh.
Go do a little deep dive on Kenny Lofton, Bobby Grich, and Lou Whitaker.
Yes.
And if you come away thinking that none of those three or one or two of those three doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame, I would argue with you.
I have been screaming for Kenny Lofton to get in the Hall of Fame for 10 years now. I don't understand how it hasn't happened yet, and I can only pray that the Veterans Committee lets him in when it's time.
Yeah, he was the one and done, and that was not right.
No,
I think
no.
He got 3% of the vote, and that feels criminal to me.
But that means when he does get in, I've got a chance to make his Hall of Fame ceremony, because I probably didn't have the money to go to Cooperstown back in the day when he should have gotten in. So that's right.
Well, congratulations, and I know you're hearing the face for radio thing that we all hear when we make that transition to television, but you'll be great, and look forward to the season starting here sooner than later.
You and me both. I will see you at the ballpark sooner than you think. Len, thank you so much.
Thanks, Connor.
All right, Len Casper, voice of the White Sox here on ESPN 1000, and a standout guy. We got a lot to talk about here on White Sox Weekly. We're going to talk prospects. You're going to hear from Kyle Teal. The White Sox unveiled a couple of different things at Sox Fest last night. In case you missed it, there's a statue coming to 35th and Shields this summer. We'll tell you who when we come back. It's White Sox Weekly.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Sox fans, sign up to become a White Sox insider for updates on the 125-year anniversary celebration this coming season. Get all the latest updates on games, promos, breaking team news, and other exciting Sox content delivered free to your inbox. To enter, visit whitesox.com/SoxFestSweeps. I'm Connor McKnight. Big thanks to Len Casper for joining the show off the top. Jack McGrath is our producer. And I was actually just scrolling around Twitter this morning after Sox Fest Night 1 last night. The giveaways have all been announced for the Sox season. It has been setting Twitter a flurry. A lot of Sox fans, notable, kind of posting all the different images of really cool stuff. I have only perused, mostly just perused, and taken a look and kind of thumbnailed it in getting ready for the show. But, man, there's a lot of vintage, like, kind of throwbacky stuff. A lot of, like, heart of the franchise. This is what it felt like to be Sox fans in this decade, that decade, this decade. And it has gotten a lot of good reviews.
Well,
as they normally do.
I'm liking the first one. First game, the 125th anniversary plush blanket. You can throw that over on a cold opening day.
That's
and
a win.
I'll take that. It's got a cool image on it with 125 years and all the players and everything like that.
The 125-year logo is really good.
The 1907 replica jersey in game number two.
That's flowing, striking.
Oldie but a goodie.
And very, very good.
That looks old-timey. I'll say that.
You got to have that. Yeah, you got to wear that one. I like the blanket on the giveaway on opening day. That's what you need. You're going to
hopefully use that for a long time.
Yes, you will. Yes, you will. You keep that around. It's a good throw to have. Speaking of throwing down over to second base, a Kyle Teal, White Sox prospect, one of the top catching prospects in all the game, was on MLB Network just the other day. One of a handful of White Sox prospects ranked in the top 100. And that's kind of the theme for this segment, just the MLB pipeline. And I say this every time we talk about prospect ranking, right? And I think it matters. I know I say it every time. But the reason I say it is because it matters. There are a lot of places that rank prospects. There are a lot of places that do it incredibly well. I'll often refer to MLB Pipeline because it is it's MLB Pipeline, right? It is kind of ubiquitous and really easily accessed. It is not like Baseball America or some other spots behind a paywall, which are worth it. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Baseball America subscriber, a Fangraph subscriber, the whole thing, BP, everything. Since everybody's on this, you can just make the click and read it while you're on the train or whatever. We'll often refer to the MLB pipeline rankings. New top 100 is out yesterday. They revealed it last night, I think in the 6 o'clock hour or something like that on the network. And Kyle Teal was on with Matt Vasgersian and somebody else on the network. We'll catch the voice in just a sec. But Teal talked about his opportunities with the White Sox, why he's excited about joining the system. Here is Kyle Teal on MLB Network.
drafted as a first rounder by a team, as you were with the Red Sox. And I'd imagine the only thing you're thinking about is playing at Fenway Park as a Red Sox, after all. So take us back to learning of the trade and learning that you'd be moving to a new organization.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, you know, the whole vision was with the Red Sox. And that's what I would go to sleep dreaming about every night. But when I got the trade, it came as a complete surprise. And you know, I looked at it as a great opportunity. And now that vision has switched to playing in the White Sox ballpark. And I'm just ready to go. I'm looking forward to it.
Well, that trade doesn't happen if you're not in it. I mean, that wasn't happening.
That's right.
Not, the Red Sox are not getting Crochet. I'm going to tell you what, we go so far back. I met this guy when he was a youngster in high school. And oh, here's a shot of us. Look, the one thing, this is great. I'm glad they're showing this, because my first thought, Kyle, when I saw you on camera today, is how much you filled out.
Yeah.
I mean, it's amazing watching you grow from a boy to a man. So what has been some of the things that you've done to put on the beef and get so much stronger? He went from this... He had the frame, but he's grown into it, man. It looks great.
I think I just had to grow in age, number one. And number two, it's like I've been eating a lot of deli sandwiches at my Uncle Roger's place. But that combined with, you know, working out every single day, just really having a good routine in the weight room and those things combined just really have put me where I need to be.
Go back to that youngster in that picture to now. What is, you went to Virginia, All-American, you did your thing in college, got drafted in the first round. What was that youngster thinking to you now and to get to where you were at?
You know, I've always had the dream, you know, playing the big leagues, and that's what's always pushed me forward. And, you know, that dream really hasn't changed, and that's what I'm working towards.
Did you think about your swing maybe changing now that you're not going to be hitting off the monster in Fenway? Will that affect you at all?
No. My swing's going to be the same. You know, I'm swinging hard at every pitch, getting my swing off.
Tell us about the after the trade, phone calls you might have gotten, text messages you might have gotten from Will Venable and everybody on down.
Yeah, I got calls and texts from all those guys. It's so funny, like in the moment, like when I was getting calls from those guys, I didn't really know who they were just because it happened all so quickly. So it's really cool to be out here now and put a face to the name. But yeah, I got calls from all those guys and they're really excited to have me on board.
It's Kyle Teal on MLB Network with Matt Baskirgin and Harold Reynolds, of course. Sometimes your memory fails you after a long night at Sox Fest, but that's my fault and no one else's. You heard HR mention it. Teal was ACC Player of the Year in the spring before his final season, in his final season at Virginia, and graded as one of the best all-around catching prospects in all of baseball. Samuel Basalo of the Orioles is the number one catching prospect via MLB Pipeline. Dalton Rushing of the Dodgers is number two. Kyle Teal, number three. And then Edgar Caro, another top prospect in the White Sox system, ranked number nine. We are going to have a chance tonight, myself and you, if you're going to Sox Fest, and I hope you are, to talk to four of the top five White Sox prospects. Kyle Teal, Braden Montgomery, Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith, and Director of Player Development, Farm Director rather, Paul Janisch, and I are going to be up on stage having a chat about what it means to be a top prospect and what it means to, you know, play for your position, play for your playing time, and battle for that kind of thing in spring training when we get down to Glendale in just a couple of weeks. I'm really looking forward to it because I don't know if you saw just the other day, Schultz and Hagen Smith were named the top two left-handed pitching prospects in all of baseball. And it is only the second time, I believe, in the last 15 years that any one team has had the top two players at any position. I believe it was the Mariners with Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez just a couple of years ago, both outfielders, the last team to have that done. And I think, too, and we'll get to this a little bit later on after the break, but, man, it's tough to find a pitching prospect these days. And myself, I think I'm always drawn back to kind of that middle 2000s idea of there is no such thing as a pitching prospect. And what that roots itself in is the risk for pitchers to get injured. Well, that hasn't changed a whole lot. But the projectable pipeline, the projectable idea of a pitcher has changed quite a bit. And the way we evaluate pitchers based on some of the high-level cameras and metrics that we've got has gotten better. So when you find that top prospect, you kind of have a better idea of who he's going to be in the bigs than we used to, injury concerns notwithstanding.
Yeah, and I think you look at Noah Schultz as that top prospect too, right? Jim Callis of MLB Pipeline wrote in his article when he's ranking all these prospects that Noah Schultz not only has the highest ceiling out of all the prospects, but he also has the highest floor because of his physical build and the way he's able to use his slider. It's such an effective pitch that Callis trusts, and I trust as well, that that will translate to the major leagues, and he should remain fairly healthy based on the way he throws.
Yeah, I saw Noah last night. He is quite tall, and I think the scouting report had him at 6'10 and 240.
He grew an inch.
Yeah.
So he was 6'9, 220.
Right. Yeah.
In the prior report last year, and he's, what, 21 years old, and now he's 6'10, 240. So he's still growing. And that I guess it helps his frame because the way he throws, he's basically throwing from behind the left-handed hitter. So he'll just keep on reaching out there and whipping it back in with his three-quarter delivery.
First baseman's walking it into a lefty. It's going to be nasty, and it's a lot of fun, too. And I plan on asking Noah tonight a little bit about the new stuff he's working on, too. I'd read a little two-seamer with some sink is in the mix. And, I mean, listen, if you are a White Sox pitching prospect right now, and you don't have a changeup, you know, like if you're not Drew Thorpe, you are being asked to fiddle with or work on a changeup. That's kind of what Brian Bannister, I mean, not just a changeup, but we've seen a lot of success with guys like Davis Martin adding a kick change and all this kind of stuff. This is the kind of player development, the kind of edge of player development that the White Sox are on right now, and they're seeing the dividends already in some of the prospect reports and prospect rankings. So we'll dive back into this in the rest of the top 100. We have barely scratched the surface here. A lot more to talk about with some of the bright and promising White Sox players on that list. When we come back, I'm Connor McKnight. He's Jack McGrath. You got White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app. 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.
Follow Chicago's home for sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000. 1000.
Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 with the White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today to get access to top matchups and the best spaces. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. It's White Sox Weekly, ESPN 1000. I'm Connor McKnight. Been talking about the top 100 prospects in baseball as ranked by MLB Pipeline and debuted last night on their network. The White Sox have six of the top 100. In fact, they have the second most prospects in the top 100. The Cubs and Mariners, both of those teams have seven total top 100 players. The next tier are the Dodgers, Tigers, and White Sox, each with six of the top 100. And incidentally, each of the 30 teams has at least one top 100 prospect. We talked last segment about how, you know, in a way, evaluating players is becoming is easier or simpler the right way? I think it's probably simpler because we've got the technology to make it look a little bit different. We've got the technology. We can do it. But that doesn't mean that just because a computer readout tells you that the spin rate is X, that he's going to perform like Y in Major League Baseball. We're not there yet. I kind of hope we never really are. There are some fallers on the list, some guys that dropped at least 25 spots, nine players moved down 25 spots or more, and the White Sox have one of those in Colson Montgomery. He was ranked number 9 last year and is now ranked number 39 on the prospect list in this season. And, you know, given as much as you and I have talked about Colson Montgomery over the last, I don't know, like 4 or 5 months, that makes sense, right? I mean, the thumbnail is he had a bad year, he had a good fall league, he learned a little bit, and he still looks like a pretty good ball player at some point. He's just got to put a little bit more of it together. He needs a more consistent 2025 at whatever level.
Well, 2 years ago in 2023, he was the 38th ranked prospect.
That's right.
So he took a huge jump last year, and now he's back to where he was a couple of years ago, which you can kind of expect for him, I guess, to settle in that range.
Yeah, saw Colson last night. I think that's good perspective, too, Jack. I saw Colson last night. He is... Man, and a lot of these young kids fit the description, or fit this description, rather. He's geeked up about the opportunity because I think most of these guys know in this top 100, with the exception of Braden Montgomery, who you know obviously didn't play last year because of the ankle injury in the College World Series, he's going to have a good amount of minor league time. But whether it's Hagan Smith, or whether it's Noah Schultz, or whether it's Kyle Teal, or whether it's Edgar Caro, or whether it's Colson Montgomery, each one of those guys has a really solid opportunity to, at the very least, have their first cup of coffee in the bigs in 2025. If not, you know, in the case of Colson, or perhaps one, but probably not both of those catchers, debut on opening day. That's the opportunity that's here.
The one that really intrigues me, too, is Hagan Smith, just because of the way we've seen college pitchers progress through the minor leagues. I think Paul Skeens last year is the best example. He pitched, what, 30-some innings coming out as the top pitching prospect out of LSU, took his time in college, pitched in college, went to the minors, and the Pirates said he's already good enough to pitch in the major leagues. I think with Hagan Smith, I'm hoping he shows that he's very, very good and can progress through the major leagues, even though he's still pretty to the major leagues, even though he's still pretty fresh in the minors. And I don't think it's out of the question that we can see him at the end of this season.
I think you're absolutely right. I think one of the things that speaks to that is the fact that he pumps the strike zone. And this is on MLB Pipeline. They ranked the top tools of the top left-handed pitching prospects, Hagan Smith being the second, only to Noah Schultz. I'll read you the little blurb. Smith came out as having the best fastball, a 65 grade. And here's the blurb on Hagan Smith and the heater. Smith set an NCAA Division I record for strikeout rate, 17.3 per nine innings, good Lord, and also led the nation in average against at 144 last year, thanks in large part to the fastball. He topped all college starters in heater overall, which I believe just means usage, 42%. And this is what I love, this is what I absolutely love about a fastball, an in-zone swing and miss rate of 39%. That means he gets it by him, and that's got to mean it's going to be a little bit different moving from college to the pros, college to the minors, minors to the majors. But if you can pump that fastball in the strike zone and get swing and miss, that means it's good, it's got a high spin rate, and you're putting it where you want it for the most part. I mean, you're going to miss, right? There's got to be misses. The average miss in Major League Baseball is close to a foot. I mean, even the best pitchers are missing on average by about a foot when they miss. And that's, you know, you'd still get by with some really good stuff. The rest of the top tools on that top left-handed pitching prospect list, the best slider, Noah Schultz. Here's the blurb on Schultz and the slider. Using his 6'9" frame and low three-quarters arm slot, which Jack described just a little bit ago, Schultz produces exceptional horizontal action on a wipeout breaking ball that continues to gain velocity and now sits in the low 80s and peaks at 88. Double-A hitters hit 152 with 42 strikeouts and 102 plate appearances against that slider. Schultz also the best control on this list. And three pitchers tied with a 55 grade, which, again, these are current major league evaluations, right? So it's not what he can get to. It's not the potential rating. It's what it would be kind of now in the show. And just a sentence here on Schultz. He has solid control, which is pretty amazing considering his size and youth. And he sports a 153-30 strikeout to walk ratio in his 115 and a third innings over two pro seasons. And as Jack, you mentioned earlier, highest ceiling, Noah Schultz. Highest floor, Noah Schultz. I'll take it.
And the thing Callis mentions in there, though, is based on Schultz's slider and him relying on that pitch so heavily, that even if it doesn't work out as a starting pitcher for Noah Schultz, he could be a phenomenal closer at the big league level, which I'm interested in seeing because this past year in the minor leagues, in his outings, he never threw over 70 pitches in one outing. Now, in 2023, he had a couple of arm injuries, which may have factored into that. But I'm interested in seeing as he develops, if he turns more into that late-inning reliever or stays as a starter.
Yeah, that's the big question for 2025 for him, is how deep into games can he earn himself? And then, you know, as you get later on in the year, if he is pitching well, very little reason to think he won't. If he is pitching well and starting to get deeper into games, he already dominated double-A hitters. And as we've talked about on this show a lot, Charlotte is not where the AAA ball club is for the White Sox. It's not the best environment to evaluate the results of a pitcher. It is a hitter's environment. It's an absolute bandbox. So even if he leaves one up, it's a pop-up everywhere else, but it's a three-run dinger in Charlotte. So you have to kind of look at this differently, too. How much do you want to press Noah Schultz? Well, some of that is going to be answered by how many more innings does he have, and at what point in the season are we talking? I thought this was interesting, too, here. And there's two little bits. Just, it's about all prospects in baseball, too, because I think it's kind of informative about where the game is. Talking about demographics in the top 100, right? Not just the White Sox, but everybody's top 100. Shortstops carry the day on this ranking, so the piece goes, taking up 25 spots. A quarter of the top prospects in baseball are currently shortstops, the most they've ever had on a preseason or midseason top 100. There were also pipeline preseason highs for most catchers, 13, and second baseman, 8. Those peaks corresponded with a valley for total pitchers. Only 25 arms, 19 righties, and 6 lefties, the White Sox have 2, cracked the top 100 this year, in part because innings limits and injuries have lowered the ceilings of pitchers across the sport. That isn't to say that there aren't high-quality pitching prospects, however, with Roki Sasaki sitting up top and 3 in the top 8. I should have mentioned probably that Roki Sasaki, the Dodgers, is the number one prospect in baseball, with Boston's outfielder Roman Anthony at number 2. Also this, farm reports, right? That's kind of the state of the overall system for some of these teams. And they write, the Cubs and Mariners both claim the most top 100 prospects this year with 7 apiece. Dodgers, Tigers, and White Sox each with 6. Raw numbers of the top 100 prospects don't tell the whole story. We can also look at the strength of each group's top 100 class through the idea of prospect points. And this is kind of a weighted ranking, right? You get 100 points for having the top prospect. So the Dodgers get 100 for Roki Sasaki. 99 points for the second ranked. 98 for the third ranked, and as my grandfather would say, and so on and so forth. In that mode, we have an AL Central battle in prospect points at the top between the rebuilding White Sox and the upstart Tigers. So I think that's an interesting perspective too, right? Because let's not get it twisted and let's not lose sight of the end goal here. And actually, Chris Getz talked about this when he was talking with Len on the stage at SoxFest Live last night. Len brought up the fact that they've got the two best lefties in the minor leagues. And Chris joked, well, that's it. You know, job complete, right? And he said, no, of course it's not. You got to get into the whole thing. And the goal is not to have a top-ranked minor league system. The goal is to win games at the major league level and take down divisions and put up flags and pennants. That's the idea, right? However, it is well documented, that having a farm system that's ranked in the top 5 at any given point does reap benefits, that there are material aspects to this, whether it's by the prospects themselves maturing and matriculating onto your major league roster and providing wins above replacement there, or trades that you're going to make from some of these players to get the guys that finish off an AL Central champion. It is well documented that that works and it pays off. So no, this is absolutely not, and Chris Getz would be the first guy to tell you, job completed for the White Sox. But yeah, I think you absolutely can say, listen, this feels a lot different than it did in January of last season. It feels a lot different than it did in January of 2023. And to be honest, as we get into our next segment, talking a bit more about SoxFest and what's coming up in the 125-year anniversary season, everybody there last night felt ready for it. Everybody there last night felt excited and jazzed up about being able to turn the page and using SoxFest as page one of whatever 2025, whatever this next little era of White Sox baseball is going to be. And it was a fun evening. I got to be honest. You could probably tell from my voice that I enjoyed,
out to Len's band a little too much.
I enjoyed myself a little bit. Listen, when the diff hits the stage, you rush the rail. How are you going to be at the front of the stage if you don't rush in when the door's open?
And you have to be yelling and screaming and jumping around.
How else do you attend a rock show? I don't understand. If that's wrong, I don't want to be right. More White Sox Weekly when we come back.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Closing it up here on White Sox Weekly. Celebrate your special occasion in 2025 at the White Sox party area. Reserve your group outing today. Get access to top matchups and the best bases. Visit whitesox.com/insider today. When I leave the studios here at ESPN 1000, I'm heading down to Bridgeport and the Remova Theater for Sox Fest Live Day 2. Really looking forward to it. Great seeing everybody last night. Really enthused about picking right back up for day number 2 as well. One of the things we learned a lot at Sox Fest Live last night. One of the things we learned was that we are going to get a statue of Mark Burley this summer at the ballpark. Burley was there. He broke the news with Chuck Garfine up on stage. It was a really cool moment. And the White Sox put out a video on all their socials of the process of their creating the statue of Mark Burley. And I thought about playing that here on White Sox, but it's a very visual. It's like just looking at the statue a lot and a lot of music. It doesn't quite translate into the medium.
You could give us play-by-play of the...
I could do our scene opens with the statue making. With a clay carving. It looks really cool. The other thing they unveiled, and this I knew was happening but didn't know, the documentary of the 2005 World Series Championship is on its way. We saw a trailer of it at Sox Fest Live last night. The audio version is as follows.
When they always talk about like the greatest teams and all that, we never get mentioned. I'm like, 11-1 is pretty good, you know?
Not enough people talk about that 05 World Series.
Sox fans waited so long to have a team win the World Series.
88 long years.
We were taught some very tough lessons. We needed a little bit of an edge.
A lot of those guys in that team came from somewhere that they were kind of pawned off. It was kind of like a misfit somewhere. So they came in ready to work.
It didn't matter what happened prior. Be angry at the right things and focus it on the field.
That's when you become brothers.
It's gonna go! Light it up!
There were gut punches along the way.
We lost Frank Thomas.
We started seeing Cleveland in our rearview mirror.
If anybody says they weren't nervous, they're full of crap.
So many things have to go right.
El Duque with the bases loaded in Boston.
4 complete games.
We will never see that again.
A.J. Pruszynski stealing first base.
And it got everybody by surprise. Like, what the?
Scott Podsednik hits the game-winning home run.
This is happening.
There's no way they want to walk the guy that's hitting 200.
Long, it is gone.
The anticipation, like you feel it in your fingertips, feel it in your toes.
Everybody step it up a notch.
What a remarkable play.
It's such a hard thing to do, and now you're all connected forever.
It looked magnificent. I got the chills. The voices you heard, of course, Joe Buck, Mark Burley, Paul Konerko, Tadahito Iguchi, Kenny Williams, Jeff Blum, Bobby Jenkins, Scott Podsednik, Jose Contreras, John Garland, John Rooney, Ed Farmer, and Ozzie Guillen, of course. It was great to hear all those voices and see all those faces in a lot of different instances. The other stuff we learned at Sox Fest Live last night was some of the giveaways that are happening. We mentioned this off the top, but my wife texted me about a couple of minutes ago. One of the giveaways is a 1980s sweater vest, and I have now been threatened to bring one home, or she's going to be very mad at me.
Wear a lot of sweater vests?
No, I've never seen her wear a sweater vest in my life. I struggle saying sweater vest in that kind of, it's hard. Sweater vest. It's a little
say
difficult.
It 3 times fast.
My last day? No, I don't think I'm going to. It's a very Ditka feel, this White Sox sweater vest. So I'm going to have to scoop one of those up. The White Sox 1940s varsity sweater, very preppy. Wear that to the country club. You're not allowed to anymore. There is, guys, a giveaway of an AM-FM, a working AM-FM radio. It is a mold of the 1959 year Comiskey Park. It is Comiskey Park from 1959, and it's an AM-FM radio. You can listen to Lennon DJ on a 1959 Comiskey Park radio.
That's a giveaway? I'd pay big money for that.
Yes. And I want one of those so badly. I can't even. We need to have one in Lennon DJ's booth. We probably have to put it right in the middle of the both of them. We're going to have to find a way. Ziggy's going to have to find a way to plug it in so it broadcasts the live. So just instead of a monitor, Jack, instead of a monitor, we use that as the monitor in the booth.
It's phenomenal. June 28th against the Giants. I'm putting
June 28th
down.
Against the Giants?
First 10,000 fans.
All right. We're going to have to be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 in mm-hmm. line there to get enough radios.
Camp out the night before?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Let's do it.
June 28th, beautiful weather.
Yes, yep.
Tailgate.
Exactly.
Meet some of the guys for it. Yes, that's how we do that. That's how we do that. Listen, it has been it's been a joy and a privilege. It really has. I'm moving over to CHSN from here at ESPN 1000. And yeah, it's been really special. Lennon DJ mean a ton to me and a ton to White Sox fans. It has been an incredible 4 years of learning and growing and talking to you along the way. A huge thanks to every single person who has hit a button or spun a dial, helping get the pre, post, White Sox Weekly and the games themselves on the air. There's an incredible amount of talent here, and I am so proud that we're your voice for White Sox baseball on the radio. Thank you so much, and tune in next week for White Sox Weekly. Have a great day.